Hi, this is Robert from P5 Marketing, and this program is part of our ongoing conversations with our clients and thought leaders. My guest today is Dr. Steffi Althaus. She's an award-winning PhD chemist, innovator, self-professed geek, and she is the CEO and founder of Top Notch CEO. Welcome, Dr. Steffi.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So Top Notch CEO is a leadership training and coaching program for women in STEM, geeks, and the people that manage them. I read that description on your website. I think it's very clear. But your passion is working with women in STEM. Can you tell us a little bit about this passion?
Yes, absolutely. Well, there's most passions come from having been there and done it yourself. So that's what happened here. And basically, women in STEM is sort of a subset of the geeks who I love to work with. And so let's first say, what the heck even is STEM, right? In case somebody doesn't know, it's science, technology, engineering, and math. And so we're talking about women who are in these geeky fields. And the challenge is that there's not that many women still to this day in those STEM fields. Women in STEM are underrepresented by quite a bit. And for example, in engineering, we're around 13% or some such. And there are some challenges about, you know, how do we get more women into these fields, and how especially do we get more women into leadership positions in those fields?
That's true. You're a woman in STEM, actually. I mean, you started out, in the basic science portion of the business. What was your path like? How did that go for you?
Right. So thank you for asking. The way it happened is I am very passionate about science, about figuring out how things work and how to create new innovations that hopefully can make our life better. So I decided to study chemistry. I was also quite interested, honestly, in biology. But yeah, I studied chemistry, got my PhD in that field, and was actually well on my path to staying in academia, when over a little bit of time during my postdoctoral research, I realized that I really would like the innovations or the research that we do, you know, to lead to innovations that people can use sooner rather than later. So eventually I decided to leave academia, and I came to San Diego and joined a small high-tech firm, company. And it was really a fabulous experience. It was a fairly rapidly growing company, given that it was only about 40 people when I joined. And at the time when I joined, I was the only technical staff. So you can imagine this is a company full of PhDs and full of engineers. And I was the only woman. And I didn't really think too much about it. I mean, obviously you notice it, but I became basically one of the guys, and I had a good relationship pretty much with everybody, and I just went about my work. And so eventually, you know, as the company grew and as the people who had joined the company, you know, became more, you know, senior, the company structure was pretty flat. And so the question came, okay, so, you know, what is the path to advance? And there really wasn't particularly a path to advance. At one point, I actually walked into the CEO's office and said, you know, I think we should have a CTO. And I had prepared a write-up about, you know, what the CTO's job should be. We didn't have an official CTO. And what was funny was I got half the job of what I had proposed which was, as I had pointed out, that we didn't do a particularly good job about protecting our intellectual property. And I got that job, although I didn't get any increase in title or, for that matter, any increase in pay. But I did get an increase in experience.
Right.
So that's a little bit part of the story. So eventually, the company got acquired twice, once pretty early on, once, shortly after I joined the company. But we were still independently operated, and the company that bought us was maybe five times our size, or maybe even actually only two times our size. So for the most part, they left us to our own devices. Eventually, we started to collaborate a little bit with them. But a few years later, we got acquired by a very large company, one of the biggest ones on the planet. And that's when I realized that I started to look at, what are the opportunities to advance in this new situation? And I realized that all the people who were the bigger bosses, they didn't have PhDs. They had bachelor's or maybe an MBA. And when you looked at their work history, they had basically packed up themselves and their family every 2 years and gone to a different division of this big company. And that's when I decided that that path was not for me. And so the entrepreneurial blood was boiling over and had been for some time. I had basically built a business within the business, and I realized this business, even though it felt like it was my business, it really wasn't. And so I can just tell you that over the course of all of this, I've attended many conferences. I've been part of the Athena group in San Diego, which is for executive women in the sciences area. And so I have many contacts to women in STEM, basically all over the country, even all over, in different parts of the world. And I know the problem firsthand. And I also know a lot of the debate that happens about women in STEM. How do we get more women into STEM? What do we have to do early on? What do we have to do later on once women have actually gotten their degree? A part of the problem is, when I went and studied chemistry, actually about 50% of the students were women. It's way higher in chemistry than it is in engineering. But what's interesting is in the professional world, we don't see anywhere near those numbers. So where did they all go? That's a very good question. And why did they leave? Why didn't they stay in the field? And so we can talk a little bit about that and talk a little bit about what is the solution here.
Your approach to the solution is really empowering women rather than trying to affect national policy. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely, yes. I'm not dissing. I'm not, saying it's bad to try and facilitate the change somewhat through policy. However, I think the much more effective way is to do it through empowering women to actually look at the root causes. Why is this happening? And what can we really do about it? Rather than forcing people to hire certain quotas and things like that, which can also lead to a lot of resistance.
Resistance and resentment, right?
Correct.
So how do we get more women into STEM fields?
Well, first of all, let's look at the problems, I would say, and then let's look let me answer your question first. So yes, how do we get more women even to study it? That would be the first part. That's of course up to us parents and the teachers at the early stages and as our society as a whole to encourage girls to go into these sciences and not see it as, something that is predominantly, just of interest to boys or some such. I was very fortunate in that. I mean, my parents were both teachers, however, not in the science area. My parents were both German teachers. I grew up in Germany, and also history teachers. And when I started to show an interest in going into the sciences, they said, you know, we can't really help you there very much, but they didn't discourage me. And I had an extremely awesome chemistry teacher in middle and high school who really encouraged me a lot. I, in fact, switched from a school that was very much focused on language and social sciences to a school that was much stronger in also the science area. I mean, they were strong in everything, but they were strong also much stronger in the science area than the first school I had gone to. And I had this feeling, oh man, I'm totally behind. You know, what can I do? I probably can't compete against these other kids, you know, or be as good as the other kids who have already had all the science. And this teacher said, basically, bollocks, I don't believe that at all. And within a very short amount of time, I was, you know, top of the class. And so it's encouragement in the early stages.
And then...
Well, then...
You know, it's funny. I think society is shifting more and more that direction. I mean, I think fathers always want the best for all their children, sons and daughters. So I see that evolving. But once women get into STEM fields and they begin to have jobs and seek employment, what additional challenges do you see them facing?
Well, so then there are challenges that basically range from, okay, so you got your education, now what? You know, the joke is you got a BA or BS, then a MS and a PhD, and now I want a JOB. So now you're in the, more than likely, the first thing you do is get a job rather than start a company. I mean, very few people start off their career, you know, being an entrepreneur right away, although there are some. The problem is, in a nutshell, that women often really don't advance as far as they could, and there are a variety of causes. And some, this is the good news, are completely unnecessary and are actually unrelated to discrimination. So we'll talk about this in a second. And the other part of the problem is it's a challenge. It's a huge challenge for companies that hire highly talented women if somehow we lose these women. Because hiring someone, especially someone of high talent, it's an investment for the company. And if they lose that person, that could be due to, you know, that's a loss to them. It's a significant financial loss and opportunity loss. And so what causes this often is perhaps the lack of opportunity for growth and advancement. And in fact, statistics show that. And also conflicts between the demands of work and family. And then, of course, both factors can come together. So, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to point out, I think there's three factors that we could dive a little deeper into. There's mentorship, there's how we as women tend to pursue promotions, which may be different from how men pursue it. And then there's what we could call the mommy factor. So in terms of mentorship, women often don't get the benefit of mentorship the same way that guys get it because they're not in the club. And I did notice that a little bit in this company, even though I had a tremendously, you know, I felt well accepted and well liked and, you know, and so forth. And I think there was a little bit, though at the really high level, you just never quite know whether you know, that's happening or not happening. It's very hard to tell. There's also the fact that men could be afraid to offer mentorship for fear of that getting misconstrued. Oh, you're hanging out so often with so-and-so, what's going on, you know, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And then the other part is there's a lack of opportunity for acquiring the business, strategic, and financial acumen that's required for top leadership positions. And The problem is that women often are not told they even need those skills. And by the way, this is a problem for basically all geeks, all, you know, top experts. When I say geeks, I mean, those are people who are very passionate about the subject, so passionate that they've spent, you know, an extraordinary amount of time to get even better at that subject. So they're top experts who offer oftentimes expertise that no one else has or very few people have. So all geeks basically have this issue that, you know, we spend all this time going to geek school. So let's say in my case, chemistry school. But we didn't have any courses on business or strategy or financial acumen. So, or leadership. But as you progress in your career, these skills become more and more important. And unless the company makes an investment in you, or you go out yourself and get those skills, or you're fortunate enough to get really good mentoring, you just don't have it. And that can keep you stuck somewhere in middle management. That's what happens to a lot of women. And it happens to some guys too. It happens disproportionately to women.
And you mentioned that women approach going after promotions differently than men. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so there was actually a recent Harvard Business article, a recent Harvard Business Review article that talked about that, and it's called the disappointment factor. So they found that women actually give up on pursuing promotions way more quickly than men do. So if it didn't work out the first time, they're not as likely to go after it again. And I mean, that's something that we as women can control. We can say to ourselves, hey, you know, just because they said no the first time doesn't mean they can't say yes the second, third, or fourth, or fifth time. Or maybe we got to go to a different company, but you know, you got to stay after it and perhaps be a little bit more aggressive with, you know, just pursue your goal and do whatever it takes to not say to yourself, I can't, after somebody said no.
That's good advice. That's good advice. What about this? You talked about the mommy factor.
Right. So the mommy factor is an obvious difference. So since no matter how many equal rights we have, you know, we're still, women are still the ones who actually give birth, and you know, I've been through that, and I feel very blessed that I've done that. I will tell you that when I was younger, I wasn't sure whether it's really possible to, how should I say this? I mean, to have a really successful career and be a mom at the same time and not have one or the other feel like it's getting the short end of the stick, as one says, right?
Correct.
So that became a big question for me. And in fact, a lot of my work consists of solutions, you know, or answers to this very question. So the mommy factor has to do with losing female talent to the mommy track. There can be issues with continuity and leadership during maternity leave. So that may be one of the factors that quite silently, but still in reality, it's happening. Women might not get promoted to top leadership positions in a place at a time when the employer might think that, okay, it's about time for this woman to have a kid if she does, you know. Although you look at Marissa Meyer at Yahoo, you know, there's certainly more and more examples of us women breaking through that. And I think it behooves all of us to think outside of the box and to not have, you know, well, I almost said 9-to-5 thinking, but in reality, women in STEM and also men in STEM, we don't work 9-to-5 anyway. We work typically a lot more. That's right. My experience, at least. And, you know, when I talk to people who are in, you know, high-tech, high-demand companies, they report to me that, they tell me that oftentimes it's, as I said, it's a high, high demand, fast-paced environment, and people do burn out. And if companies could figure out that that's actually a bad idea for women, but also for men, and they started to shift their culture a little bit, they would save money on that lost talent. And they can still achieve just as much, I would say, based on my own experience, on my own work, in my own life, as well as with my clients. I can tell you that working harder isn't always the solution. In fact, you know, working smarter is, and there are ways to do that. So the mommy factor can, it's never going to go completely away, I would think, but it can be greatly diminished.
Let me ask you a question. I mean, because, you know, women in STEM and diversity in the workplace, I mean, it's not just a good idea or a socially powerful idea. It really improves the bottom lines of companies that execute it properly, doesn't it?
Yes, it absolutely does. And the reason is, this is also a big aha that I had somewhere along the lines of my own career, is that when you're the only woman in a team of men, it can certainly lead, and it's in fact very likely to lead, to you behaving very similar to your male colleagues because you want to fit in. Mm. The downside of all that is that you may be not playing on your own strengths in part, and you know there are some differences between men and women. We have different leadership styles in part. So women tend to be more collaborative in their thinking. Men might be a little bit more competitive in their thinking, etc., etc. Well, it turns out it's not that one is better than the other, but the mix of it is actually the most effective. And so the more perspectives we allow to be brought in, the better it is. And in fact, there was a recent study that said that, and that was also reported in Harvard Business Review, that said basically that if you have no women in corporate leadership, so basically not the CEO, not on the board, not other C-suite positions, and you go from that to a 30% female share, not even 50, but just 30, that leads to a 1 percentage point increase in net margin, which for the typical firm leads to or translates to a 15% increase in profitability. So that's pretty massive.
That is pretty massive.
Well, and when you think about why, it's in part because of the things I just said with the leadership styles and putting in more different perspectives. It's just, how idiotic is it to leave half of the world out of top leadership positions and expect that you're going to have the same amount of wisdom and the same degree of problem solving happening? You cut out half of your brain, you know, the collective brain, if you will, then you're getting only half of what you could have. That's one way of looking at it.
That's a very realistic way of looking at it. So thinking forward, I mean, what contributions do you feel that you're able to make now for women in STEM and women that are considering STEM careers?
Well, it's on the leadership and business acumen end of things. So you can think of this as rocket fuel. So here you have all these STEM experts of both genders. And the men are more likely to get put under the wing of another man already, you know, in a top position and get mentored for the reasons we just talked about. And I'm not saying that's always the case. Just that statistically it is.
Well, particularly if you have a company that has an overwhelming number of men in it than women, then the women don't have as many opportunities for mentorship just out of sheer numbers.
Right. So as soon as you have some women in top positions, the likelihood that emerging women leaders in STEM get mentorship goes up, hopefully dramatically.
Correct.
So we offer programs where women in STEM can systematically learn leadership and business skills and get along with that strategic and financial acumen. None of that was ever taught in school, you know, in their geek school, whether that's chemistry school or physics school or whatever other grad or engineering or, you know, whatever discipline we're talking about here. And by the way, it is not a problem that is completely only isolated to STEM. You know, you go to law school. Well, did they teach you business there? Probably not. They taught you law, etc. So it is basically true for all top experts. But focusing back on STEM, this is rocket fuel to your career. And that rocket fuel can be applied to different stages of your career. It could be that you're in a job in a STEM company and you're looking for the quickest way to advance as you can come up with. So this is a huge accelerator, and you don't actually have to stop earning money, stop, you know, your career in the STEM field to now stop and you do a, you know, a business school and get another degree. But what we do is extremely practical, and we talk about, you know, the things that we teach and coach are exactly aimed at the STEM environment, because we know that environment. We speak that language because, you know, been there and done that. So what I had to do is I literally, my own path to, you know, complete that a little bit more, is as we were coming up with innovations, you know, I started to write research grants. I had to write commercialization paragraphs, and I thought about it and I thought, gosh, you know, I have never had any training on this, but it's really intriguing to me. And I asked some colleagues of mine what they write in their proposals on this, and they said, well, you know, don't worry about it. It's, you know, the government's not really that serious about wanting us to commercialize this. And I thought, wait a minute, what are we doing? I left academia so that we could work on innovations that can really be applied. I'm passionate about applying it. You know, I'm passionate about making a difference. So I'm passionate about teaching the women in STEM and coaching them around really, you know, having that focus of making a difference with their talent. Because to me, the worst thing that can happen is, well, one of the worst things anyway, is that you're going to have a tombstone on your grave that says, still so much talent inside. That's not acceptable. Not to me. So it's about taking your talent and transforming that into what we call wealth. And wealth isn't just money, because a lot of people think, oh, wealth is money. Well, it is money, but it's not only money. You can think of it like a three-pronged stool, you know, a three-legged stool. So one leg is money. So if you're an employee, it's income or bonuses or perks or whatever they give you. And if you're a business owner, now we're talking about revenue, and actually we're talking about profit. And then the second leg is making a difference, making an impact, and, you know, on whatever scale you're working on, whether that's, you know, local clients or a technology that can be rolled out globally, whatever it is, but making a difference. So because to me, that's where you derive a lot of your satisfaction and fulfillment in your professional work. And then the third factor is to create a quality of life that you love. And so, you know, some people describe that as work-life balance, and that's fine. I think it can go a lot deeper than that. It can go into literally getting to the spot where you know, you realize that you can create and author your life. That's not a conversation that people typically find in any kind of, you know, STEM-related graduate school or whatever it is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think I know the topic for our next interview.
Cool.
The concept of work-life balance and understanding wealth and how it works in your life is certainly worthy of another deep dive. But yes. I think we've run out of time.
Okay, so that's totally fine. I've really enjoyed this. Thank you
I want to thank you for being on the program. I think there is a lot of great information here for people to chew on, and they can find you on the web at www.topnotchceo.com. And I think your website is, by the way, awesome. And really does, there's a lot of information there on all of the topics that we discussed today. So that's topnotchceo.com. So I'd like to thank everybody. Thanks, Dr. Steffi, and we'll be back.
Absolutely.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.